We're on 2nd of February and we're still discussing the union budget, which was announced yesterday by the finance minister. With me in the Mint studio is Sonu Iyer from EY, who's a tax expert for the budget and today, to talk to us about what it means after one day we've digested the budget and also take some of your questions. Welcome, Sonu. Thank you so much for being with us.
Monica, my pleasure being back in the Mint studios.
Okay, so first thoughts. What is this one big theme? Every budget has a theme. What was your takeaway from this budget?
Fiscally prudent budget. Okay. And we spoke about it last time when I was here, that we expect the finance minister to stick and be predictable on the journey of fiscal prudence that has been we've seen over the last 3 years. So very well presented, very balanced budget. No doles, no big ticket populist announcements. Great budget.
Okay, and when you say fiscal prudence, we know that he said that he will stay with the fiscal deficit and revenue deficit FRBM targets. He's exceeding them a bit, but overall the direction is fiscal prudence. You know, why should you and I as householders worry? So yes, when we talk of macro, when we talk of at 20,000 feet, we are saying yes, yes, fiscal prudence. Why should it matter to me at all?
So I think the simple rule is that, you know, how does the government really get the money to finance anything? So ultimately, it has come to come from the taxpayer's pocket. So he could have become popular and given tax breaks and everybody could have been happy. Big companies, corporates would have celebrated. Individuals would have said, oh, we got all the rebates that we wanted, all the deductions. Yet you got to remember, ultimately, he has to take it from another pocket. And that pocket is again financed by the taxpayer. So I think this is the transparency that we see in the governance that is there. So he's very clearly brought out, you know, where he is going to be able to give a break. And if you notice, the break that he's given on the tax side of 5% reduction in tax rate, he's very candid and very transparent that it is coming from imposing
Correct.
A surcharge on
yeah.
one category of the income
right.
taxpayer.
Right.
So that's an example to say that we should really worry because this ultimately impacts the taxpayer.
Right. So if there's a big dole out, we need to worry because finally it is us who pay. And governments who are fiscally imprudent cause inflation. And who does inflation hurt? It hurts all of us in very, very high consumer prices. So we've got a macro situation where inflation is under control and the government is fiscally prudent. This actually works very similar to our household budgets. You know, if you look at the debt that we have as households, would you not worry if you couldn't earn enough to finance your spending? And then whether your loan was for personal consumption, for eating out, or for building a home. I mean, those are the two sort of expenses that we as households think about. We would happily take a home loan. And that is really the capital expenditure of the government. And would I take a loan to eat out consistently? Probably not at all. But when the government does that and their revenue deficit numbers go really up, that is the reason why we should worry. Because finally it comes back to us. Because the government will inflate away its debt. It will borrow more and more. It will inflate away its debt. And we will have to pay in form of higher prices, lower returns, real returns on our fixed deposits. So we are in a situation where the real return is actually higher today than it was previously. So yes, absolutely. The whole fiscal prudence is the reason why I think we are really on course here.
Yeah. Well, just to add to it, I think it's a great example you picked up because each one of us living in a house, we understand what you know, how to run a house. And I also want to bring in here that, you know, this is the age-old wisdom of our, you know, parents and the generations before them. You know, you don't spend more than what you earn. And this is where we are really seeing those value system, you know, guiding how you present your budget. So there is economics that is there at work. But certainly the wisdom that you don't spend more than what you earn and you do not want to be an outright consumerist society where your credit cards are maxed out and you don't have enough money at home to be able to meet basic needs.
Right. So that is the macro piece. Now let's come to the tax proposals where some people have lost, some people have gained. So very quickly first, what did he have for the income tax payers, the evaders? And then third, who won, who lost? So first, what did he do on income tax?
Okay, let me try to get all of these questions answered. So from an income tax perspective, we discussed last time when we met that there was expectations galore. So maybe he didn't meet up all expectations, but I think what he chose was a very wise course. There is a 5% reduction in the rate of tax applicable to the slab between 2.5 lakhs to 5 lakhs, which what it means is that almost everybody benefits from it. And this would mean a loss to the exchequer. Of course, this has to be funded by somewhere. But Finance Minister has also said that, you know, he's introducing a surcharge on sort of new rich beyond the super rich.
The mass affluent.
And people who, you know, he talked about how people, you have statistics around new cars and foreign travelers. So the new income category, a new rich category of, who are people income earning between 50 lakhs to 1 crore, there's a surcharge of 10% that's been introduced. This surcharge is being used to finance the tax break that we've got. So this is the change. What it means is that people up to 5 lakhs will, you know, really everybody will get something. People beyond 5 lakhs, you can see a, you know, 12,500 advantage before surcharge, and it says across all of them. There is a pain for this new rich category. They will have to pay more tax than they were paying earlier. But then, you know, he did say, let's make some people, let's contribute towards the greater good of the country in his budget speech. What else is happening in terms of, you know, long-term capital gains? The definition of long-term capital gains in case of land and building has been changed from 36
months. So we will come to that. We'll just come to that. I just want to stay with the income tax space just right now. So we know that people up to the income of 5 lakh have actually benefited quite a lot.
Right.
And he did say that everybody is going to get 12,500 rupees more.
Right.
Just talk a little bit about that. And also talk about what sort of losses are people between the income of 50 lakh and 1 crore seeing. You know, how much would be my extra tax outgo if were I to be part of that?
Okay, so first this one, you know, if you are, say, earning 55 lakh rupees, this was your income, taxable income, you'll end up paying about 1,37,000 rupees more in taxes. If you were, you know, a person who was bit over 5 lakh, you know, you would pay, you would have a net saving of 12,500 and which will actually go up to, you know, by the education cess that is there.
Correct.
So, people up to 3 lakhs actually have no tax to pay. So, you know, you're really going to be benefiting a mass, critical mass of people. This is what I like about the budget. It's a greater good of larger number or larger sections of the society, which stands out. I mean, he's trying to help more people with making a prudent change in the tax rates.
Right. And also, he did announce something about the senior citizens, and that was announced earlier. There's an 8% annuity, the guaranteed annuity. Just take us through that.
So the Varishth Bima Yojana that they announced for seniors.
It's an old scheme, but now they've announced a new rate.
Yeah, so they'll work it out, but then there will be an 8% guaranteed rate of interest, which will be, there's a 10-year lock-in for the funds, but you will have 8% earnings on it, which can be paid periodically, quarterly, monthly, or annually, whatever they will choose. Is chosen by the senior citizen.
So we are still waiting for details to come out in terms of how much people can invest and...
Yeah, but the 10-year lock-in has been
announced. And who pays? Is it the policyholders who hold LIC policies? Do they pay? The difference between, see, market rates have fallen. So who pays?
The government that will fund
The government will fund LIC.
Right. So again, you talked about, you know, you have little and how you want to spend.
Right.
So we are seeing, I'm coming back to the macro part of it, but you see, this is going, all the expenditure that he's talking about is going towards helping the poor farmer, helping the rural sector, financing housing for people who don't have housing. So Housing for All, which is the national mission, housing mission statement by 2022. So all of this is being then, and similarly for senior citizens, that scheme is being funded by the government.
Right.
So it's again social security, taking care of the old age
people. So we've got a question, I'm going to quickly take that. We've got Rishu Doda saying, I make a donation to a temple. Will the 2,000 rupee limit apply? I think his context is of the political funding, where the finance minister has said that the cash limit has dropped from 20,000 rupees to 2,000 rupees.
So it's actually for both. The change came in. It said that, you know, in any donations which are made in cash over 2,000 rupees, they will no longer be eligible for deduction under Section 18G.
Okay, so it is eligible for a temple as well. I mean, you cannot put 2,500 in a hundi, then...
And if you want to claim a deduction, obviously not.
Okay.
So, if you want to get a receipt and be eligible for a deduction, then you have to make sure that it is paid other than by cash.
Okay.
And you also mentioned another change that has been brought in from a cash transaction perspective. Any donations made to a political party over 2,000 rupees cannot be made in cash to be eligible for a deduction as well.
Okay. But so let's stay with this whole electoral process. I mean, one of the worries has been the way that political parties get their money. You know, there's a whole sort of obfuscation in that. And the demonetization process has been attacked to say that you didn't do enough. But now with this whole concept of electoral bonds, one is, what are these bonds?
Right.
How does it clean up the system? And do you see actually political parties getting funded through firms who buy these bonds from banks or RBI and then make the donations?
So Monica, I think if there is a game changer that stands out in this budget, it is this, you know, the complete political transparency on how the political parties get funded. This will, you know, fundamentally change the way politics is played in the country, I hope. Mm-hmm. And with this electoral bonds coming in, these will be issued by Reserve Bank of India. We still have to get the details of what and how the electoral bonds will work. The only concern I want to maybe peg, maybe it's unintentional. There is some, when you read the fine print of the budget, it says that political parties are not required to disclose the names of the people who hold these electoral bonds through which they've got their funding. It does suggest some sort of a Benami bonds for electoral. So maybe it is unintentional, it wasn't noticed. But since it is electoral bonds, RBI will certainly have records
Correct.
Of it. So
Correct.
There is tracking that is possible.
Correct. And also, once you've actually bought, there is always going to be a serial number.
Right.
So somebody somewhere will know that data will exist as to who has bought, and when the political party goes to redeem the bond, big data will not find it too difficult to match the two, right? So yes, it may not be in public discourse, but the data will exist to match who has given and who has taken.
So very welcome step.
We've got Gunjan Mangla asking, I'm a salaried employee. My taxes are deducted and deposited by my employer. I usually file my returns. Will I have to pay a fee now? After my due date, do I have to pay a fee?
Yes.
What is this?
So interestingly, earlier you could file a belated return and not pay any fine for
okay.
some time. But now we are saying if you file a due return after the due date, so if you're a salary income, your due date is on or before 31st July,
right.
you will end up having to pay a fine of 5,000 rupees if you would file it before 31st December. Of the same year.
Okay.
And if it is after 31st December, it's a fine goes
That's
up to 10,000 rupees. And there is also keeping in mind that, you know, low income earners, for people earning income less than 5 lakhs, you know, I think there is only a fine of 1,000 rupees.
Okay.
So they've kept in mind that
Correct.
It is not, you know, too much beyond the income
that
is being earned.
And that's fair enough. I mean, when we need to catch a train or a flight, we get there in time. I'm sure we can file taxes on time as well. There is no need to.
Simple discipline being introduced.
Correct.
You know, why would you ignore filing your tax returns?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've paid your taxes, just file it and get it done with.
Yeah, correct. Okay. I want to now come to the real estate piece. We did discuss a little bit about it. So there have been several changes in the real estate space. So let's start off by talking of this long-term capital gains tax. Markets were up because market was expecting the finance minister to do something bad about the zero tax status of long-term capital gains on equity. He did not do that, but instead he gave a little bit of a sop to real estate. Tell us about that.
I think so. The expectation management was great. I think markets celebrated immediately after the budget was announced. So no bad changes on long-term capital gain. In fact, what he's done is he's brought in a parity between unlisted securities where the long-term gain to apply, the period of holding is 24 months. Similarly, for land and building, if the period of holding under the current provisions was 36 months for it to be eligible for long-term capital gain status. Now, this has been brought down to 24 months as per the budget presented yesterday. So there is a parity that is brought. And really, I think the idea is to, you know, give some cheer to the real estate market, to encourage investment in real estate. So it's a positive.
But it'll be a brave person who's sitting on real estate gains right now. So you will have to have bought it 10 years ago. Because markets are in real estate markets and deservedly so. I mean, this has been the sump of a lot of black money. Developers have done really badly by the people. So yes, there is a two-year window now, two-year time.
But to, you know, Monica, I'm cutting you here, but the bonanza is that he's also brought an interesting change on indexation.
Okay.
Which means that, you know, earlier properties bought before 1st April 81, you had to go back and get a fair market value as on 1st April 81 to be able to calculate the cost of acquisition. Mm. Now that has been changed to say that because it's a 3 decades old, 1481 value, it's not readily available, circle rates for different properties. So you can now use 1st April 2001 as the basis for cost of acquisition. What it means is that the appreciation before 1980, between 1981 to 2001, has actually gone untaxed completely. So you're getting a step up of the appreciation, which has not been taxed.
So your capital gains, your profit would be less. I mean, the profit which is supposed to be taxed will be less. And he did also say that there'll be more instruments which you can put the profit in. So what we need to know is that when you make a long-term capital gain on real estate, the profit that you make can be parked into bonds of NHAI and REC. And those up to a limit of 50 lakh, and they become tax-free. I mean, you get an interest which is taxable, but your capital gains is tax-free.
So up to 50 lakhs of capital gains can be put under current provisions, can be put under NHAI and REC. What this budget now proposes, it there would be other bonds issued by the government which would have a similar benefit. So there's widening the market from
because the people used to not find the bonds in the market. I mean, that was a strange part. People had money to invest, but REC didn't have a bond. NHAI did not have a bond. So now we should just see more.
Right.
There was one more change in real estate, which was that the interest which was set off. Just talk us through that.
Okay, so it's a bit of a, you know, dampener for people who borrow money and invest in house property, etc. So what has happened, and actually we did talk about it last time also. So there is, you know, currently the provision is that if you're staying in your own self-occupied house property, which you own the property and you're paying home loan, the deduction that you was eligible for, interest deduction that you could get, was capped at 2 lakh rupees. While if the property was let out, then the entire amount of interest could be set off, which meant even if you didn't have corresponding income from house property and you had a loss eventually because of high interest deduction, that entire amount of loss could be set off against any other head of income you may have. So whether it was income from salary or PGBP, you could use it to set off in the current year itself. Now, the change is that in case of let out property, that interest deduction would therefore be capped only at 2 lakh rupees, which is at par with self-owned, self-occupied house owners. And the set-off that you will can carry off the excess loss beyond 2 lakh rupees to 8 subsequent years, but it can only be set off against income from house property.
Okay.
So in that sense, it is deferred loss carry forward, but you're not losing it completely, but you are getting a limitation there.
Okay. Okay, so basically we've got parity between people who bought the home and lived in it and people with money who bought as an investment but were allowed to take the entire deduction. So again, it sort of fits in with the larger theme of the budget of hurting the people who are really well off to give to the people who are not. So it's consistent with the overall theme.
Yeah.
We have a question from Divyanshu Sethi. I've taken a loan and I've let out a property last year. He got a set-off loss of 8 lakh against his salary income. What will be the impact this year?
Okay, so exactly what we just spoke about.
Yeah.
Now, earlier, he could have set off this 8 lakh rupees of loss until 31st March 2016. He can set it off against salary income as he has done. But next year, if he has the same 8 lakh rupees of loss against his income from house property, he will not be able to do, he will be able to set off only 2 lakh rupees, 6 lakhs he will have to carry forward to 8 years. And then set off against income from house property only.
Okay. So I will now move to the NPS issue. We've got some changes announced in the budget on the NPS, which is the National Pension System. So tell us what has happened and is it good, is it bad, what happens?
Okay, so we saw that, you know, from the last year budget onwards, the finance minister is trying to make NPS also appealable. So sort of, I think the larger theme is bringing in a choice of, you know, retirement fund benefits, really. You know, if you're choosing between Provident Fund, NPS, and potentially any insurance plans that may be rolled out. And for this NPS this year, we saw a change. First change is that for self-employed people, earlier, you could only get 10% of your gross total income as a deduction.
Yeah.
Now that has been increased to 20%, which is again to bring in parity, because employees could, you know, get 10% of deduction, you know, as on their own contribution. They could get the employer to contribute 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they could have the benefit 20% of salary being,
But for the unorganized sector, that
wasn't there.
So there was no employer.
It is a parity thing. The other change that we've seen in NPS is, as per the scheme, NPS, PFRDA scheme allows you to withdraw 25% of your contribution.
Midway.
Before the age of 60.
And there are some provisions that it has to be for a medical reason or home loan, marriage,
your daughter or son,
medical education.
So the purpose is defined in the scheme, and 25% withdrawal is permitted, but there was no provision exempting this from tax. Now we've got a provision which says 25% withdrawal under NPS anytime before 60 is also exempt from tax. However, now there is maybe an oversight or a typo which we have. This benefit is again being restricted to an employee on withdrawal.
We saw last year
also the provision which allowed 40% of the 60% that you can withdraw at the age of 60. Again, the tax benefit was only available for an employee. So the word used.
But they did change that later, or they did not?
They did not. So the word continues to be in the act.
So
withdrawal currently, self-employed will still have
there.
To pay
okay.
tax because there is no provision which supports not taxable.
Okay.
I think it is something that maybe...
It's an oversight, because why would you stop it for... It's a scheme meant for the self-employed. Why would you keep them out of this benefit? Okay.
And it's absolutely the intention to benefit the self-employed.
So Gayatri Bhasin is saying, I'm paying a rent of 60,000 rupees a month. What will I have now? What is my TDS deduction? And what do I need to do? I think people are worried about this
new
TDS.
Provision.
And again, to just get it right, this 50,000 rupees rent threshold is per month or per year?
Okay. So the words used are more than 50,000 rupees per month or part of the month or whatever.
Okay.
So if you pay more than 50,000 rupees of rent, you will need to deduct 5% as TDS before making the payment to the landlord. Now, the interesting part of this is that you don't have to take a tax deduction account number. Normally, a tax deductor is required to apply and register as a deductor.
Mm-hmm.
When you're an individual, you are paying a rent of more than 50,000 rupees per month, you don't need to apply for a TAN number. Plus, you could pay it as one time. You can pay it at the time your lease is closing during the year, or wait till 31st March and deposit the entire TDS.
Suppose I'm an employee, I'm working here, and I have to file my tax returns, and I've paid the 60,000 rupees of rent, and I've deducted the amount of TDS, right? So I've kept it with me. So how do I give it to the government? What happens?
So on 31st March, you can deposit it. You can do a one-time transaction.
Okay.
You can choose to do it every month if you want, they're allowing you the flexibility here.
So suppose I'm going online to file my tax returns. I will see a window which says... your TDS amount.
We have to see how it will be operationalized.
Okay. That's the problem. So I've collected it, but there's no way that I can pay it, and then they'll say that you didn't pay. You know, so we feel afraid when these things happen.
So How am I supposed to pay? Since there's a lot happening, simplicity of the tax return form for people who are earning up to 5 lakhs, this will also be fairly simple. I mean, just who would have thought, they would do away with the requirement for a TAN. So they're not making it difficult.
Yeah.
But I think the intention here is to make sure that we broad-based taxation and more number of landlords who do not file returns get tracked.
Correct. And landlords who take money in form of furniture and other stuff. Yeah.
Some interesting schemes around.
Yeah. Okay, now moving to the question of dividend tax. So again, when these announcements are made, people get really afraid. There were all sorts of rumors on mutual funds getting taxed. All of that is not happening. What did he say on dividend tax, and what does it mean for who?
Okay, so I think it is a fairly simple announcement. If I say today, if you are an individual HUF or a firm and you get more than 10 lakh rupees as dividend, you pay 10% as tax on that dividend.
Okay.
It's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this has been extended to other resident taxpayers, except a domestic company, because the company is giving out the dividend.
Correct.
But it has gone on to extend to other taxpayers. Again, the parity principle is being brought in.
Correct. So, what I'm understanding also is that somewhere they want to look at corporate trusts who have formed trusts and enjoy dividend income from possibly their own companies. And
again, attacking the tax planning and tax avoidance that may possibly exist through corporate trusts, but they have excluded specifically trusts that are there.
Hmm.
So corporate trusts could be the target, but it's not coming out clearly from that. They are talking about a wider class of resident taxpayers would be subjected to, but there are some specific exclusions that have been provided.
We have a question from Chandar Kindra, who's saying that would the withdrawal made from NPS by a doctor be tax-free.
Interesting. So you just spoke about it.
Yeah.
A doctor would be treated as a self-employed person.
He could also be an employee. So if he's an employee, then we know the answer. If he's...
So as an employee, you would be able to get an exemption on withdrawal. So if 25% withdrawal being made, that's exempt from tax. But if the doctor happens to be a self-employed profession, then this withdrawal would be taxable as per current tax provisions.
Right.
I'm again putting on record that this could not have been the intention, but it seems to be an oversight, which probably will get rectified.
Right.
Maybe we need to make a representation for this.
Right. So one of the things that Corporate India wanted was a reduction in the corporate tax rate. It has happened, but not in the way that they wanted.
I think what has happened? Very smart, right? So I think Corporate India was hoping for, you know, Trump-like 15% to 18% tax regime to come in, saying there is strong business compulsion for it to do so. What the finance minister has done, he has given the relief to companies, but he's made it very targeted, you know, encouraging medium and small industry to get this benefit. Mm. So it is not giving, a dole out to all the corporates.
Everyone.
They may be disappointed, but I think probably it wasn't the right time. And he's already committed to reducing corporate tax rates. So it will happen over a period of time.
Right.
But, you know, there
not
is some relief.
Now.
You know, domestic transfer pricing between two taxable entities has gone away. So in that sense, you know, there is some pruning and some, you know, streamlining, but it didn't go the way Corporate India was hoping that there would be a reduction in corporate tax rates.
Yeah. Anup Bhandari is saying any transaction in cash above 3 lakh can't be done. What about multiple bills of 2.99 lakh? What happens
so this
then?
This is creativity again. So the change, if I may say, Monica, what has been proposed is that cash transactions of 3 lakhs and above cannot be made in a single day.
But I can make it every day for 30 days.
In a single day per transaction. And for a single event. So those are the three categories.
Okay.
Now, and they said, you know, a transaction will have to be made through an account paycheck or a bank draft or through, banking system. There, I would have hoped that they'd use the word cash explicitly. They haven't used the word cash explicitly. So there could be, you know, real interesting situations when you're, you know, supposing you are a bank and you've given a loan to someone and you're repossessing, their shares or a property to repay the loan to yourself. Now that loan will be considered a transaction which is offsetting the loan that is in my book, but you know, will the company or the banking company have to pay a fine, although they've excluded a banking company from that, the transaction per se is a language that worries me. There could be an off chance of saying, okay, you know, when I go to withdraw money on a single day, if I withdraw 3 lakh rupees, could this be considered as an interpretation that I can't withdraw 3 lakh rupees in cash? I think that's a bit far-fetched interpretation.
Okay.
Maybe not so.
So the aim is to, for instance, stop a property transaction of 30 lakh in cash. That's what they wanted to do.
Yes, and that's what he said in his speech as well. Intention was to be to avoid cash transactions, and particularly property where people pay in cash.
Right.
So this will hopefully.
So suppose somebody is going to buy a car and it costs say 6 lakh, or 5.5 lakh. So the guy can make, he and his wife can make, can buy the car in a joint name. Is it possible? And then give cash of 2.5 lakh each.
But you must also remember, Monica, they're also expecting all jewelers, luxury good, you know, banks to keep records. So if someone goes and buys a car and says, we're buying a joint name and this is 3 lakhs, it will still be considered as a single transaction.
Okay.
So it won't, I don't think such creativity will work anymore.
Okay. And that again comes back to this whole digital drive of the government that this possibly is going to be the backbone for a lot of cleanup.
Right. So clearly the message is we are past demonetization, the economy is fairly remonetized and we are rewarding people who will, so presumptive taxation in case of small traders and some professionals, where if you take money through bank draft or check or digital wallets, they had made this announcement before the budget. This is now being brought in through the legislative rule into the act. To allow that in case of such presumptive taxation, 6% of the receipts would be taxable. But if you are, same trader takes money in cash, 8% rate would apply. So, you know, really incentivizing the small trader bookman, you know, to ensure that, you know, you're accepting digital wallets and checks, etc. You're also saying that, you know, for the first time filer, which I thought was an interesting thing, that there will be no scrutiny, no questions asked. So clearly wanting to broad-based taxation, bring more people into the tax network, which is a good move.
Yeah, and I had a question actually on that.
Okay.
So this first-time taxpayer who will not face a scrutiny unless there is reason to go after him is only going to be an individual or also a firm? So suppose there is a local Kirana Garg store is there. He's never filed his taxes, but now he says the cost of non-compliance is too high. I will comply, sleep well, but I don't want them to say, but you've been in business for 20 years. What happened?
Right. So I my takeaway is it would apply to all taxpayers who are required to file a tax return.
Okay.
So, you know, whether it's your local Kirana store who has never filed a tax return, they should file the tax return because it's their chance to become part of the legitimate economy.
And being legit has a lot of other benefits. For instance, credit. I mean, we don't sort of understand the linkages that being legit has because, again, banking has been such a sort of closed club. But as banking itself opens up, the benefits of going legit is that you get more credit, so you can expand.
Unless the question's asked, and, you know, because if you're a taxpayer, you have a PAN number, it automatically elevates you to a different status. So, I think we heard about some of that in the speech as well yesterday.
Okay, I think we are done with all the time we have. Thank you so much, Sonu. Pleasure having you here.
Always a pleasure talking to you.